Charles, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Anthony. Thank you.
Could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, it's a challenge to talk about myself. I'm just kind of a private person, but I'll do the best I can on that. Again, my name is Charles Chuck Wendler. I was a former educator, if you will. I guess I think I still am. According to my wife and children, I still preaching to them, if you will. But I say, no, I share information. Come on, guys. Give me a break here, okay? Anyway, I'm really a family kind of person. It really gave me a lot of joy. In my other life, I was a school person, 37 years, a public servant, teacher, science and math, middle school and high school. And then I got into school administration, started out, of course, as assistant principal, and finally got up to the principalship. So I did that, 11 or 12 years teaching, and then the remainder, 25, 26 years as an administrator.
Why are you running for the State House seat in your district?
Frankly, Anthony, I just want to give back. I've been truly blessed, and as I reflect back on my life, being in the public sector for 37 years and business too, I've seen a lot of changes. We've had a whole cultural shift, frankly, I just feel like, you know, there's some things that are good that's happened. That's true. Technology, so on and so on. If I've got a broken bone sticking out, I want to go to an orthopedic, get that taken care of. But socially, I remember when I was teaching physics, and we had the slide rules. I was teaching the kids slide rule, you know, and handheld little calculators were just coming in, and I read the literature at that time, and we were warned, if you will, actually, that technology is just booming. It's just progressing at such a turbo speed, and we're going to have a challenge to keep up socially. And I'd like to think that that particular prediction has borne fruit, okay, in, at least in my world it has. So, yeah, I've seen a lot of things culturally speaking, and in even technology we need to be able to use it in the right ways as well, okay? So yeah, I just want to get back into the situation where I can truly be a public servant again, if you will, to share information and let people know what's happening. And I like to be part of the solution, not the problem. We got too many people creating problems. No offense, okay? I'm just as guilty as anybody else. You know, I have my wants and needs, of course, and I think so much of the time we get caught up in the wants. And I started out in life, I think, particularly newly married, being probably more materialistic than I should have been. And I'm realizing now it's not about the money, folks. It's about the quality of your life and for your family and for others. And so that's primarily the reason why. I just want to give back.
What do you feel are the most pressing issues in your district and also across the state of New Mexico?
Well, you know, again, science and math, I have a tendency to analyze things, and maybe more so than some folks. I don't know. Everybody's mind works differently, I guess. But as I look at things, and again, as a former teacher and principal, and law and order. I mean, if you the first function of a government at any level is the security and safety of its citizens. And I think there's probably more and more concern about the area of law and order than ever before. And so if you can't feel safe and secure in your daily life, then it looks like to me just about anything else doesn't really matter a whole lot, okay? And so I would say, and there are many issues, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's a lot of fires going on all over the place. But I look at foundational things. I like to get at the absolute truth of things rather than just looking at symptoms and putting bandages on them. So I like to uncover all those layers of that onion, if you will, and look at the core. What is it that's really creating some of the challenges that we have today? And I'd say law and order is one of them. When we have, and again, I don't want to get caught up in not criticizing anybody, but, you know, I think we need to evaluate and critique things for what they are. You got to define the problem. Scientific method, define the problem first. And I think we've not really done that as well as we could have. Then you begin to gather the data that's available to see if you can come to some kind of a possible solution, remedy. And then you try and experiment a little bit with different things. But you got to be careful with that experimentation thing. You can kind of go too far in some ways. But anyway, getting back to your question, That's the key thing, I think, that we need to focus on is law and order. Now, people can come up with all these current issues, but those are symptoms of the lack of law and order. And I might say along with the law and order thing is we have our rights, and there's no question about that, but we also have responsibilities. And as I've seen down through time, I think we've done an excellent job of teaching people about their rights. But I don't think we've done as good a job of teaching people about the responsibilities that come along with maintaining those rights, not only for ourselves, but for everyone, because we are society. Whatever we say and do impacts others around us. So it's law and order first, okay? And then secondly, it's education. Because people, again, our country and our form of government was based upon a large, well-informed middle class of people. And so education, people need to become aware of the issues, okay, and what's going on, what's causing these things, and what are possible solutions. And I'm talking about education, not just with reading, writing, and arithmetic, so to speak, but I'm talking about how to take care of your health. I mean, we've got a health crisis in our country and have had for a long time. Look at the amount of obesity among even young kids, type 2 diabetes, et cetera, et cetera. And as a former science teacher, I know we didn't really spend as much time on teaching kids about maintenance of their machinery, their own individual bodies. You know, we do a better job of taking care of our cars, I think, for the most part, than we do ourselves. And then we wonder why, when we get to a certain age, we begin to kind of fall apart. And so education, I think that transcends most all the issues. And we have the responsibility of educating ourselves. I think, again, we get caught up in relying upon other sources to educate us on these things. And I said, it comes right down to it. We have the responsibility of educating ourselves. So education is a biggie, number two.
Okay.
And number three is the economy. Finally, we can get to the economy. After we have law and order, if that's possible, and if we have then this issue of educating people, then finally we can get around to saying, okay, now we're in a position to where we can kind of do something about being prosperous for all people.
So I want to talk about this. You've talked about public safety, law and order. You've talked about education, and you talked about the economy. If
yes.
elected to represent this district, how do you feel you can make an impact in solving some of these challenges?
Well, first of all, I go back to some of my opening comments about my experience. And I'll tell you, there's just no substitute for experience. So I offer that, my experience, and I'm retired. So I don't have a job per se. We're still involved in small business, but I'm able to work around things. So I offer time. I offer my resources. And time is a critical commodity that we all have. We don't realize it, but you've only made so much time for yourself. So you got to be able to do that. So I'm talking about my personal attributes that I think that I can contribute. Now, you want to get down to specific solutions, that's another matter. But I think we need to, first of all, focus on the individuals that would be serving you. Do they have the personal resources to do what it is that needs to be done? Okay? And we're all going to sign an oath of office, okay, to support constitutions and to be impartial. Do people have that ability? And again, you want me talking about myself, I'm just telling you what I know, okay? I've been trained as an evaluator. I've evaluated literally hundreds of individuals, not only teachers, but my assistants, other staff and personnel in the building, so on and so on. I've evaluated programs, their efficacy, put together budgets. I've been held responsible for that, so forth and so on. So these are personal qualities that I've accumulated through my experiences and through my age to be able to do that. And the ability to anticipate, if we do this, I talked about the scientific method a little bit ago. Define your problem, first of all, and then go out and search around and do the research. I'm science and math, so I just really enjoy doing research. I like to kind of dig into an issue to find out what it really is all about. So I have patience to be able to do that. Again, being objective and analyzing things as best I can. And I don't mind asking other people. I go to the experts and I ask them. Like this morning, I was asking my daughter-in-law about her particular situation just so I could glean more information from her firsthand, because she's boots on the ground, so to speak. So I enjoy doing that. So I go out there and I'm rather outgoing and aggressive about finding the truth from other people's perspective, not just mine. I don't have an agenda. Okay, I want to really find out what's going on. So those are some personal qualities, and I think that's the character. You know, as a principal, I used to hire for character and train for skill. Now, you want to get down to specific issues, ask me a question about a specific issue, and I'll tell you what I know. I don't know everything. Obviously, none of us do.
Absolutely.
I can tell you, if I don't know it, I'll research and find out.
Well, let's talk about some of these issues.
Go ahead.
One of the issues, New Mexico was recently ranked last in the country for child well-being. That is by the NEKC Foundation's 2018 Kids Count Data Book. What do you think policymakers at the state level, state representatives, should do to better address child well-being in the state of New Mexico?
Well, child well-being, you know, the family is the first level of governance in our society or in any society that I know about. And so what's happening to the family? It's being eroded, it's being torn apart. All kinds of things are happening. Look at the level of domestic abuse, and kids are growing up and families that, you know, the language that's being used. Look at the TV and look at the language that's being used there. I'm embarrassed to watch programs with my children there. I mean, they're not there because they're on their own, but, you know, we do get together. The movies that I see, I don't go to movies anymore. I never know what's going to happen there at those movies. I'm not naive, you know, and I'm willing to say, well, society changes this and that. But, you know, the language, you know, you can tell a lot about a culture by the language that's used. You can tell a lot about the relationships among individuals by the language that's used. Is it respectful? Is it decent? Is it derogatory? And you can say, well, we tell jokes. And I say, well, it used to be a lot different than it is now. And I think that the language certainly is a mirror a lot about the culture. So all of these things, I mean, you know, child well-being is a broad, broad category. But if you start picking it apart and looking at it, it's a family. What's going on in the family? What's going into that inside those walls, that front door, with what the kids are viewing on TV, what they're being allowed to view? You go around to different stores and you see kids with their parent. Usually it's just a mom. You have a lot of single mothers, bless their hearts, and they're working. I have talked to mothers that are working two jobs and still taking care of their children and so on and so on. And these children are, you know, want this and they want that. They go by the toy section and of course, the poor child, and we all want stuff. The child is going to start acting up and everything, and mom, just to settle them down, say, we'll give it to them or whatever, and they go on, okay? But my point is the whole concept of discipline. Parents are not able to really discipline their child as they used to be. Because fear of people looking at him, the peer pressure. I just talked to a deputy sheriff just this last week. I won't reveal his name. We had a nice, long conversation. I just approached him, started speaking with him. He started relating to me some stories about what he's been experiencing. But these are the same things I experienced as a principal. I'd have parents come into the office because Janie or Johnny hadn't done quite what they were supposed to do. And invariably, I'd have the mothers break down in tears, literally, saying, I can't discipline my child anymore. They're afraid of child protective services coming and knocking on their door. And so I'm telling you, it's just so many things have broken down. And I know the child protective agencies, they're working hard to do their job. As a matter of fact, forget the organization, but there's a lady who's in a newspaper I just read. She says, you know, we don't need more workers. We just added 100. What we need is a protection for our workers. And this goes back to my original law and order thing, you know. She felt like that her workers needed more protection against whatever they encounter out there. And for these people to make the decisions when they go into a home about whether it's abuse or not, it's a tough call. It really is. These are very emotional issues. But child well-being, I mean, there's an awful lot of factors that play into that. And that's just part of it. I mean, we could talk all day long about that.
I do want to talk about one of the factors with
yes,
it.
Yes, sir.
Lawmakers and people involved with creating policy have suggested that the state needs to invest more in early childhood education. As an educator, what are your thoughts?
Well, I remember I was principal in elementary school. Had over 1,400 kids, and that was grades pre-K through 4th. I had two pre-K units. So I've been involved in early childhood. And as a father and grandfather, I can tell you again about early childhood. From my perspective, it goes back to the family. I firmly believe that the parents are the child's first teachers. I emphasize that very clearly because I think we've lost sight of that. It's not the state. that the child's first teacher. You're going off in a completely different road when you get involved with that, okay? But that parent is the provider of that child. They reflect, that child's going to reflect those parents' values and principles. And it's incumbent upon those parents to continue with that authority and that responsibility they have. That being said, kids do need to have basic skills in order to be able to socialize. I used to call it, we have to institutionalize the kids. I at the elementary school, I had 12 full-time kindergarten teachers in my building, okay? So I saw an awful lot of institutionalizing kids at a very, very young age. I remember kids that first day of school, kids coming in the building crying and clinging on to their mothers, and then those poor kindergarten teachers coming out and separating them, okay? So, that was a tough call. I had to really oftentimes kind of turn and walk away from that and let the teacher handle it. They were better prepared than I was. But my point is that the kids need to develop a sense of security and safety, and they do that by bonding with this caregiver, the parent, if you will, okay? Supposed to be. And that relationship is so sacred in my humble opinion. So talking about early childhood, I think we need to be extremely careful about what are you actually aiming at here?
I like to move on, but stick with education. Let's talk about testing. Is there too much focus on testing?
Yes. Short answer is yes, there's far too much emphasis on testing. Okay. Kids at an early age particularly, and I observe kindergarten kids, they just love to sit around and I watch so many masterful teachers do their thing. They get those kids, they get circle up, the magic circle, they get down on the floor and they play games and sing songs and the teacher ride along with them. Learning in that way was fun for those kids. Now, don't get me wrong, good teachers too will test them because in the delivery, they're testing the kids if they can do that. You know, the whiteboards now, you know, you have a problem, you give the kid a problem, and they all raise their whiteboards up. In the old days, it used to be the chalkboard, and you could have instant assessment, okay, on the spot. Teacher looking at the kids, they're all looking at that teacher. That's the old-fashioned way of testing, and you can do those spot checks just like that, boom, boom, boom. Master teachers are marvelous to watch. And my feeling is, and as a principal, I just supplied the teachers what I could with what they said they needed, and I got out of their way and let them do their thing. Now, I went around and evaluated, but I did that a certain way, too. If you want to talk about that, I'll be happy to talk about that, okay?
I want to move on and talk with you about something that you mentioned earlier, and that is the economy. New Mexico has struggled to regain its footing after the last recession. What do you think that the state needs to do to get back to where it was pre-recession, to gain a better economic footing? What are some of your thoughts that the state needs to address?
I don't know if the state was ever on a real strong footing, or has been for a long time, quite frankly. The recession really hit New Mexico harder than other states, and other states certainly have recovered much quicker, which means that they were more viable to begin with. If New Mexico has had a hard time recovering, why? Maybe because they weren't on as solid ground to begin with as we thought they were. I think a lot of times we have a way of kind of just camouflaging things in our minds. But anyway, get back to the question at hand. Moody, the rating folks, just lowered our bond rating, a notch? And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's been the second downgrading in 20 months. Okay? So when the bond rating goes down, that means to borrow money, interest is going to be more, which means we taxpayers are going to have to pay more, okay, for the money that the state borrows or any of the municipalities or government entities within our state. And just the other day, no offense to anybody, the city is talking about these gold bonds, GO bonds, government-issued bonds. The GRT, that's another issue. GRT, the city passed one. They went max for 3/8. They could have gone less, but they chose to go max. The county also went and did the max also, even though the city told them, and I was there at the meeting and saw that. The city folks came in and said, please don't raise yours. Well, they did anyway. So within a year or two, they went 3/8 each. You know, that's 6/8. That's 3/4. And then the spaceport, you know, that's another quarter. I mean, it all adds up over time. But, you know, you can't have a vibrant economy when you keep taxing. Some people don't seem to understand, but taxpayers have got it. So that's one thing in economy. And I think there are businesses that have been quoted as they don't come to our state because that's one reason. You've got the capital outlay mess, the Christmas tree bill that's been up in the legislature for a long time, since, I think, what, 1977. They haven't reformed that. There's been efforts, good efforts, but it hasn't gone anywhere. Why? Because according to that particular way of distributing the money, each senator and each representative gets X number of dollars depending upon how much is available. But I know what, just not many years ago, each senator got $1 million, each representative got $600,000. And I'm saying, and they pretty much have their own discretion how they want to spend it. Okay? And so then capital outlay projects that really need to be done aren't done. And so what's been happening is they've been putting politics ahead of priorities. With the capital outlay, that's one of the things that really needs to be addressed big time. So
okay.
That would help the economy a lot. And I think for every $1 billion of capital outlay, it creates like 27,000 jobs.
So okay. One of the things the state was dealing with mm-hmm. 2 years ago, the price of oil and gas fell dramatically, impacting the industry and, of course, the revenue right. coming into the state. What are your thoughts on how the state depends on the oil and gas industry as a major revenue source?
Well, you're right, Anthony. It provides, depending upon, you know, price fluctuations, but usually around a third, 30 to 35% of the state revenue comes from gas and oil. And so that's very volatile, as we well know. And that's one of the reasons why Moody downgraded the bonds in New Mexico was for that reason, because the gas and oil are fluctuating so much. You just couldn't rely upon that as a steady, predictable stream of revenue. And the other thing was the higher amount of Medicaid involvement that the state has gotten itself involved into. Those two big factors, as I recall, caused some problems for us on the bond rating. And again, that goes back to the economy. Businesses see these kinds of things, and they kind of hesitate about coming here, okay?
One of the things you brought up there was Medicaid. In New Mexico, nearly 1 million people in the state are on Medicaid. What do you feel, if elected, that you will try to do or that the state needs to do to address this healthcare issue so that the state is prepared for some possible unknown changes to healthcare happening at the federal level that may impact the state?
You mentioned the federal level, and I'll have to interject something here. I hope people realize that there is a thing called states' rights, okay? That's the 10th Amendment, by the way. And I think New Mexico is not an exception. All the states get a certain amount of monies from the federal government. And so whenever the federal government gets involved, and as in the case of any entity, whenever you're a slave to the lender, if you will, okay? And so if we start borrowing or getting from, and of course the federal government has a reputation of they get you started on certain programs and then they pull out down the road at some point in time, okay? And then you're left kind of holding the bag, so to speak, and then you got to shore up the difference. And once you set a precedent and get something going, to back off from that, I mean, it's not going to happen probably, okay? So, yeah, we've gotten ourselves involved in some situations with the federal government, I'm saying, that I don't think we should have gotten involved with. States have so many rights that people are not aware of, okay? But anyway, getting back to the Medicaid thing, I think if I may go back to the educational thing, if you said that there's 1 million people on Medicaid in some
nearly.
Nearly a million, and if I'm not mistaken, we're probably just a tad over 2 million in population. So you're saying almost 50% of the people in our state are on Medicaid. I'm saying that's pretty high, okay? I think anybody would say that. And so that's costing us. That's one of the reasons why Moody downgraded us on our bonds, okay? One of the two factors. So that being said, let's go back to education. You know, as a former science teacher, it's a matter of educating people. I think so many people, when I talk to people, you know, I'm kind of a health nut, if you will. Of course, my family says I'm more of a nut than a health person. But anyway.
So you think it's education that people need to educate themselves on these issues?
I think if people find out that, well, as an example, I think all of us, we know what we should eat and certain things we shouldn't eat, but we still go ahead and eat the things we shouldn't because, well, it tastes good, smells good, and I just can't help myself. So it comes down to discipline, which is a tough call.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
I mean, I have to discipline myself every day, you know.
I want to move on because we have some
sure.
more questions.
Sure.
In southern New Mexico and really across the state, behavioral health treatment, finding behavioral health treatment may be a challenge. Here in our part, there's lack of providers and resources, which have impacted the area. How do you feel the state can address this? As a state representative, how do you feel you can address this
issue? Well, that's again kind of like the health thing. You see, I read an article the other day, which really was, it was kind of intriguing. It really gave me some hope along this line. There was a couple that had been brought to trial and found guilty of abusing their children. Okay, talk about child well-being, kind of transcends that area as well too. And so this couple, what had happened, according to the newspaper, this man's employer, there was a man and woman in the house, thank God, but anyway, the man's employer and their pastor, someone from their church, came in and spoke for them as character witnesses, I guess you might say. And upon their testimonies for this couple, this couple was released to these two individuals to work with them. So I'm saying people in the community, people that we maybe not normally look to, the employers and someone from the church. The church used to be in earlier days a big, big component of help for people and individuals. More people went to church. The church knew their people, and they knew the ones that needed help, and they would reach out and help. I mean, and that's free. That's not government taxpaying money at all. Now, whether or not people still want to do things that way, that's another call, but you don't see it happening. And I was really refreshed when I saw that article in the newspaper. Okay, so there's hope. Okay.
Well, I want to move on to one more thing dealing with healthcare, and that's substance abuse. Opioid addiction and overdoses have impacted our state dramatically. How do you think the state should address this? How would you address this if elected as state representative?
Oh, that's known. These social issues, that's where we get kind of divergent on our opinions, okay? I'm one of those persons, I feel very responsible. What I say, what I do is something that comes from me. I have a choice. We're not born winners. We're not born losers. We're born choosers. Pretty much everything is a choice, okay? And so I'm not a victim. I'm in charge of this body, if you will. And sure, there's lots of challenges that each and every one of us meets every single day. There's no question about that. But the mark of a person is how well they're able to come out of that and become stronger. And I grew up, my mother was a single mother, raised three of us way back in the days when that was tougher than anything. I remember my mother taking us to an orphanage thinking that's where she's going to have to put us. People, I've been there and done some of those things. When I was 9 years old, I got a paper route and started earning my way, and I found out the power of money. You go out and work, you start getting things, okay, that satisfies your wants and your needs.
So you're saying that this comes down to personal responsibility?
Yeah, I really do, Anthony. Personal choice. Again, tempered with, I know that we're subject to a lot of distractions, a lot of temptations, and a lot of challenges. I know that. I've been there, done that too. But it still comes down to we have a choice.
I want to move on. Something you brought up earlier, public safety, law and order. The state has obviously had some challenges with violent crime and also property crime in recent years. How do you feel that you can address this as a state representative?
Well, let's take one isolated example. The rape kits. As I remember not too long ago, I don't remember, there's thousands and thousands. I'm going to say 50. Maybe I don't remember. I remember it was a five something. But anyway, there were thousands of rape kits still left untouched in our state alone. And I'm thinking, wow, that crime to me is unimaginable. I mean, why isn't it that people that have been raped, why aren't they taken care of immediately? I mean, that is a vulgar crime, personal attack on a person, violating their body and everything against force. Well, that's one example. I mean, that really angers me. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little excited here, okay? But that's one thing. When we start, I think, and this has been my experience again as a teacher, principal, parent, grandparent, when I think we all evaluate the consequences of our actions or inactions, if you will, and I think we evaluate and we say, "Now wait a minute, what be the worst that could happen to me? Okay, I'll go ahead. That's not too bad. They'll just talk to me to death. That's all they do is they just talk to me. I'll just sit there and listen to them, and then after a while, I'll be given another chance, and life goes on for me. Okay, done there. Okay, so you see, again, it comes down to the person You know, what is their attitude towards law and order and respect? You know, there's a movement going about support your local police and keep them independent. Keep them independent from what? From political pressure. Okay, so and so on. We need to get behind our law enforcement officers and our first responders, the firemen, people in the ambulance, military particularly. I mean, all of these people who have this sense of civil responsibility to help their fellow man and woman, to get behind them and say, we need to support you. And then the kids get this idea then, oh, these people, we better kind of watch ourselves, okay? I still, to this day, whenever I see a policeman coming, car or on foot or whatever, man, I just kind of straighten up and make sure I'm doing everything just right. I have total respect for those people. Now, we understand that they make mistakes like we all do. They're not perfect. But aside from that, for the most part, we need to have this sense of respect for different institutions, different entities in our society that's doing what they can, the best they can with the resources they have to carry out their jobs. And so many of them, that's what they enjoy doing. That's what they want to do. I've had military folks that have been drummed out because of a physical impairment or whatever have you, and they so much want to stay in. And I'm saying to myself, couldn't the military find some place for them still? I mean, these are people that have a bum knee or something like that. I mean, they could still serve. And that really bothers me a lot. It really does. Our older son was retired from military, 20 years in, Air Force Academy graduate. He's now an ROTC instructor at a high school, so he's still giving back, bless his heart. So now, anyway, there's just lots of things that can be done.
Okay. Last question. Why should people vote for you?
Well, if you just listen to all these things that I've just said, that should be enough reason, I would think, okay? That being said, if you need more information, just give me a call. I'll be happy to sit. I'll sit down with anybody, anywhere, anytime, and I mean that. I'm not, I say I'm free. I'm free. I really am. 24/7. Give me a call. I'll speak with you about anything. I'm willing to listen. You know, there's an old saying about be swift to listen and slow to speak and slow to wrath, okay? And I've been working hard at that. I mean, I will assure you, as a principal, I had to really, you know, bite my tongue and learn how to sit there at that desk and just say, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. And you can do it. I did it.
Well, we want to thank you for taking the time to sit down and talk about these issues with us. Charles Wendler, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure's all mine, Anthony.